Thank you for joining the ESBC Betting and Financial Podcast. That if you listen to us and you listen to our guidance, you are way up. So we started the horse racing podcast with myself and Raider Jim, passed the torch to First Report and Raider Jim. And now the torch has been passed to myself and Jake Now No Re. I'm still
close enough.
Now Re. Better than I know, his last name is, man, gotten to know him real quick. And, man, he works in the horse racing industry. He loves to bet. And he's a graduate from the University of Louisville, second graduate of the University of Louisville. We had Pastor Finley, and we had a great podcast about what's going on in Louisville as far as Breonna Taylor and as far as social justice and civil unrest. So he's a graduate of the University of Louisville, Pastor Finley, and that's a great podcast that I encourage everybody to listen to. And now we have the greatness of the University of Louisville.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Pleasure to be on again.
Absolutely. My pleasure to have you. We're going to have you every week to talk about the sport of kings, the way we've been doing so. Now, we've been promising you maximum security, A to Z, a true crime timeline using public records and newspaper articles. We're actually going to deliver that next week. However, this week, we're going to talk about, I love going macro to micro. So from a macro perspective, we're going to talk about the handles in the big races, how the money is handled digitally, as Jake has insight in that. He works in the industry. And then we'll narrow it down to Bob Baffert. We'll talk a little bit about Bob Baffert, and then we'll finish talking about the Preakness. And Jake has kindly offered to provide us with the top four horses. So you have food for thought on who's going to win and how to monetize the Preakness. All right? So first we'll start the macro side of it. How much were the handles in the previous Triple Crown races? And tell us how the money kind of moves around off track to on track and the time that it takes for lines to change.
Yeah, I guess I'll start here with so the Kentucky Derby this year, as well as a lot of, I mean, that's probably the biggest race in the United States,
right?
Besides the other two legs of the Triple Crown, but Kentucky Derby takes the cake there. Handle was way down this year, and I think it's a very big part of that is going to be the pandemic we're all in right now. Right. We're all dealing with, obviously, Churchill Downs. They didn't allow any fans on track, which last year was about 150,000 people. So wow. You can imagine 150,000 people that were there. If you're at the race, you're going to be betting. So that's 150,000 less people that are betting. What's up?
Yeah, not to interrupt you, and I apologize for that. But
no,
150,000 people, let's say, I would say the average, you know, some people are going to bet 100 grand, some people are going to bet $20. So I would bet that 150,000 people, the average bet would be about $1,000.
It really depends, you know. I mean, like you said, there's some big bettors, and then there's college kids like how I was when I was in school, when I was throwing $2 win bets out there just to have some fun.
Right.
But no, I mean, I'll put this into perspective for you guys. $30 million. Was about around $30 million was the on track handle last year during the Kentucky Derby for that race. And that's this year, there was no fans there. So that's about $30 million right there.
Right.
Wasn't bet on that race.
Right,
So those 150,000 people, whether it's really rich people betting and strategizing, or it's just drunk people in the infield, like I used to be in college, and a lot of people are.
Right.
It's just, that's $30 million of drunk bets that didn't go through. So that's one way to look at it. So they really took a big hit there. So yeah, that handle was down for the Kentucky Derby race, was down 52% from last year. Last year's race was $165.5 million. This year, they barely sniffed $79 million. So that's a big drop off, and that's due to COVID. I think people at home, it's not a big event when no one's there. You know, it's tough for the casual horse fans to just throw the race on, and maybe they were watching it, but they weren't betting on it. They didn't want to go through that trouble to download an app or use an ADW and bet on it. So I think they took a big hit because of COVID there.
Big hit because of COVID. And the other part of it is the culture in the event. I know different places that I've lived in the Tampa Bay area than in the San Diego area. The first day is, it's almost like the first day for baseball. But horse racing is different, right? Because you have all the women dressing up, have guys dressing up.
And yeah, it's an event.
Cool event.
Oh, yeah. The whole week itself of Derby Week leading up to it, the city of Louisville is shut down, basically. It's a holiday, you know what I mean? It's my favorite holiday. So, yeah, I mean, the fact of the Kentucky Derby Day is an event. People dress – you got to go out and you buy yourself a nice suit. Girls, buy a nice dress, a big fancy hat. They make a thing out of it. So I think without having that culture around this year, it was tough for a lot of people.
No, and it was especially tough for me because – one of the ways that I connect with my father-in-law is through horse racing, right? So when the Kentucky Derby or there's a big race, I would send him, the tip sheet and say, hey, Dad, what are your picks,
Yeah.
And, that didn't happen this year. He's in a nursing home, can't see him. So I know that a lot of that happened, right? And the Breonna Taylor thing in Louisville cannot have helped either.
No, that was another issue. I mean, they had some protests around the track because they knew there was some national coverage. Where they were all peaceful and they did the right thing. I think they handled that very well. I don't think that necessarily affected the betting on it, but it was definitely something that they had to be cautious of, which I think partially they were supposed to have limited fans, but I think part of that fear of protests and anything happening there was the reason why they said, no fans at all. So I think that was another big factor that could be factored in.
Yeah, I would say like 5% because I know.
Yeah, I wouldn't make it a huge one, but it's definitely something.
About 5% of horse bettors are African American, so the hit would have been in that percentile range.
Yeah.
And how did the Belmont Stakes do compared to last year?
Belmont was down as well with the. Let me see. Let me see if I can find some of those exact numbers. But the Belmont was lower as well too.
So the Belmont was lower. The handle was lower. And all of the bets done electronically. So if you can explain what the difference is between on track and off track betting and how it's handled.
Yeah. So the Belmont Stakes had a handle of $67.7 million this year. That was definitely lower than the 2019 handle of $102 million.
Ooh,
so so everyone took it. Racing's been taking a hit during this time with no fans. It's a big part of it. Yeah. So speaking of that, like we can go into this where the on track off track difference is the way that you could differentiate that is if a track is placed with a teller at the track, it is considered on track, obviously. If the bet is placed on an ADW or a TVG, a betting app or a betting website, it's considered off track. And the way it works is all that money coming in, whether it's on track or off track, it gets pooled into the type of bet type pools. So when the win bet has a pool, the show bet has a pool, the place bet has a pool, the exacta, trifectas, they all have their own separate pools. And all that money, when everyone's betting, they're placing their bets, that money that they bet in goes into that pool. And that's how the odds are changing, which we can go into as well, where it's the parimutuel wagering. It's not fixed odds. You don't lock it. If I get a horse in at 10-1, it might go off at 3-1 because people are betting it more. So that's depending how much money is coming in, that's how the odds are changing on those horses.
Got it.
And that number is not locked in until the gates open. And that race is off. So that's where a lot of people don't realize that a lot of beginner right. betters will say, hey, what the hell? I got this horse at 20-1 and it's only paying me on 3-1. And it's like, well, that's parimutuel wagering. That's the whole difference between fixed odds and parimutuel wagering.
Got it. That makes 100% more sense. And now I know that how instinctually, for whatever reason, I always like to bet right at the last minute.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of people do. Yeah. Cause you kind of make yourself a little more aware of what the payout's going to be.
Right. Exactly. So, very interesting. And that leads us to a guy who wins a lot. And a lot of people like me, a lot of people who are not as versed in horse racing as you are, what we do is we bet the jockey or we bet the trainer. And a guy that's made a lot of news, right? He's the trainer of Authentic. He's the trainer of Maximum Security, right? And two things with Bob Baffert, right? I want to know your thoughts on Bob Baffert. And I want to know your thoughts on something that really, as a novice, we've mentioned on the podcast before. And I even started betting it a little bit. And I'm like 3 out of 4 using the strategy. And it's when a trainer like Baffert or Doug O'Neill, somebody like that, they'll stack a race. I'll see them at Del Mar or whatever. And there's 7 horses and 4 of them are Doug O'Neill horses. I'm like, there has to be a strategy. Somebody's sending a pick for somebody somewhere. Or then you'll have Baffert. Baffert will have, 8-horse race and Baffert has 5 of the horses. I'm like, there's got to be some strategy in that with so much money involved. I could be wrong. What are your thoughts, Jake?
I mean, there could be. I'm to be honest with you, I don't know why would they do that. But right. If I was to make an educated guess, it's not necessarily Baffert's choice. It's those owners of those horses saying, "Hey, we want my horse to race in this race." So I think that's another big part of it is these owners want to see their horse race in a certain level, and the trainer Bob Baffert in this case, he's telling them, "Hey, I think this horse can win in this class of a race, and this I think he can hold up in this." So it's whatever's best for that horse and where they think they can win. Now, right. Bob Baffert putting 4 horses in 1 race, so it's basically competing. It's all his barn, so they're all kind of like a team. But the owners aren't a team. One horse wins, they're not all making money. It's if their horse wins. So, right. To me, I guess
so I would look at okay.
In my opinion, so yeah,
if one owner that owns 4 horses, and Bob Baffert's a trainer. Maybe I can raise an eyebrow. But if it's 4 different owners,
yes, there's
probably nothing going on.
Yeah. If it's 4 different owners, it's kind of, in my opinion, it's a little sketchy on Baffert's part saying, hey, sorry, everyone, compete. I win, and I have a better chance of making some money on this because I get a percentage of the purse.
Right.
But you guys, sorry. So that's a little sketchy in my opinion. But I don't think
– can't lose.
I don't – to be honest, I've never seen myself where a trainer has put 4 different owners' horses in a race like that. I think right. if he's going to do it, it's going to be all from the same owner or the same syndicate. So.
Right.
That's kind of my knowledge, but I've never really personally noticed that. So it's kind of glad you point that out. I'll be here to look for that more.
Yeah. And we'll look at it when we see one and we'll post the link in the episode notes and we can all have fun together because especially horse racing, it's been really a lot of fun. The fan engagement and some fans have given us winners too. So between the fans and us, you're 100% up. And what overall, what are your thoughts on Bob Baffert?
I like him. I mean, he's a good, seems like a great guy, great head of hair. I mean, he knows how to win. He knows how to win. He just produces great horses. I mean, he's had American Pharoah, Triple Crown, Justify, Triple Crown. I mean, his track record is just unbeatable. And he's in Preakness coming up on Saturday. He's got 1,000 Words, and then he's got Authentic as well running in there. So he's got 2 good horses in there that I think have a good chance of coming in. I mean, 1,000 Words was also supposed to – they were both – Authentic obviously won the Kentucky Derby, and then 1,000 Words. He was also going to be a Derby runner. He was a contender until he had a late scratch when he – jolted up in the paddock and they had to scratch right, him.
That's the one. Got it.
Yeah. But I mean, he always has a couple horses in these big races and he, they're always competitive. They're always looked at as winner. They could be winners. I mean, we can look, like I said, we were talking about his track record. He's won the Preakness 7 times in his career.
Jeez.
And three of them are in the last 10 years. So the last one, the winner for him was Justify, Triple Crown winner. And then American Pharoah was the 2015. And then looking at Lucky in 2010. Wow. So he's all – those three horses right there are show you, hey, he know he's doing something right. He knows how to train horses.
There's so no I doubt think, about that.
Yeah, I mean, I just think – when you hear – Bob Baffert, like I think everyone knows Bob Baffert, just because he's always in the limelight. He's always seems like he's in the winner's circle. So
now there's been a lot of controversy, and I'll ask you this last question, then we'll get into the Preakness. What are your thoughts on the Preakness and your four horses you're telling us to seriously consider? Now there's been a lot of controversy with Bob Baffert. There's been a lot of spiked horses around Bob Baffert, but you know the game better than I do. I know. In Del Mar, there's 1,000 people that are surrounded to work the track, right?
Yeah.
It's a very tight-knit community, very animal-loving community. However, he's been suspended a couple times down here in Southern California. A couple horses, you know, the testing standards in the horse race. We'll talk all about this next week.
Yeah.
It's suspect. But let me ask you this about Bob Baffert, because from my uneducated view from the outside, I would think of maybe a guy you know well, right? Rick Pitino, or I remember the Bobby Bouton days where you have the head coach, right, of a huge program. He doesn't know what's going on in the whole chain from the time to recruit the guy to get the guy in. You don't know. It used to be the big thing, right, where Mark Richt, who ended up being I'm dating myself, but ended up being a phenomenal head coach. Georgia had a lot of great teams in Georgia. When he was offensive coordinator of Florida State, he was famous for not telling Bobby Bouton anything about the game plan. They won a lot of games. So Bobby Bouton's the head coach, and he's hugging the players, and he's around them, but he doesn't know everything that's going on all the time with the horse. Is it like that for Doug O'Neill or Bob Baffert, or are they more hands-on?
I think it is in a sense. I mean, Bob Baffert trains a lot of horses at the same time. So, obviously, he's not he might be training a horse in Arkansas when he's actually in California. So, right. I mean, it's his stable, and he's got people working under him. So, obviously, they all communicate, and he's the top of the food chain. But, yeah, I think there's a little bit of a sense in that where – he might not know everything that's going on. He might not know every single detail of every horse he has. I'm sure he's got a spreadsheet with the most up-to-date stuff. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's hard to keep track of that much stuff going on with that many horses. Right. But I will say these horses, these controversies and these incidents that he's had, they're big name horses. So obviously Bob Baffert's a little more in the know with these big horses, these more famous ones, you could say.
Right.
So that's where you kind of can say, well, did he not know? So that's kind of my opinion on that.
Right. And we'll end it with this real quick. I love this. And we'll have a lot – next week's podcast is going to be really good.
I could talk about controversy of the doping of horses all day, man. There's so many different angles you can go toward it. So
yeah, that's going to be a fun podcast next week. Just the money, right? Because we lean towards the financial here. At the end of the day, we are the CNBC. We're the Bloomberg. We're the Fox Business of sports betting. So maximum security, how much is that horse worth now? Because at one point, it was a $12,000 horse.
Yeah. It's won at – they bought it for $12,000, and it's won – hold on. It's won a damn sure more a lot than that. Its total earnings are $12 million, a little over $12 million that horse has earned. And they bought it for $12,000. So that maximum security is a prime example of you never really know what can happen with these horses. People will spend millions of dollars on a horse that never even raced yet.
Right.
You can also get a horse like this for 10, 12 grand, and it could be a gem. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's a prime example of that.
Yeah, and Bob Baffert can wash his hands of this horse, right? Because my own,
yeah.
And I'll do a verdict, right? You know, rush to judgment was the whole thing with the OJ thing. And you got to have all the evidence in before you can make a decision. So we'll have all the evidence in next week. But just a knee-jerk reaction would be, that's a $12,000 horse that Jason Service spiked. And that's worth $12 million, right? But we don't know. We'll leave that as a cliffhanger for next week.
I like it, yeah.
Yeah, we just know that Maximum Security is a $12 million horse now. So what are your thoughts on the Preakness?
So I like the Preakness coming up here. I think the field's great. There's 11 horses. It's a small, little smaller field, but I think it's going to be great. It's $1 million purse race.
Right.
That's a good chunk of change there. It's a 1 3/16 miles on the dirt track. So it's one of the Triple Crowns. I mean, it's hard not to be excited about a Triple Crown race.
No, so in Baltimore.
Yeah. I like Baltimore. It's a great city. I'd love to go to, I still have yet to be to go to Pimlico, but that's on the list. That's one I'm on the list. Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, there's some great horses running in this race. We got the Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, who definitely upset the field in the Kentucky Derby. So he'll be racing there. We got the third place Kentucky Derby finisher, Mr. Big News. Also, he's looking to improve his spot here. And then I think Max Player and New York Traffic, who finished 5th and 8th in the Classic, I think they're going to be a nice competition for these horses. The way that you look at these the sheets and the past performances on all these horses, you can almost make an argument for every horse in this race. I mean, it's going to be a good tough one. It's going to be a tight one. I mean, we got Art Collector and 1,000 Words. They didn't run in the Derby. Which was a little bit ago. But I think they do have a chance to kind of be challenging and challenge a field here. Art Collector's track record is awesome. And then 1,000 Words, he won the Shared Belief Stakes in August. That's the one that fell. That's a Bob Baffert horse that fell in the Derby. He was supposed to run, but he never did because he had a late scratch there. So I think that the extra time off and he's back to full health. I think he's going to be ready to rock. There's another horse here, Live Your Beast Life. Very competitive, a great name too.
I love the name.
Yeah, very competitive in the Jim Dandy Stakes. He finished 2nd there in early September. And then right behind him, another horse in this race, Jesus's team. Jesus's team, I think, finished 3rd in that Jim Dandy Stakes. So those horses are also going to be up there. I mean, I think it's going to be a very tight, fast-paced race, I think. My favorite horse in this race, which I'll get into my top horses here. I picked 4 out that I think are my top ones, and I might try and play some exotics and different selections there. But I like Swiss Skydiver. I love this horse. It's a great filly. A trainer is Kenny McPeak. I love the guy. Great guy. Just great horse here. Swiss Skydiver, she's a filly. She can hang with the boys. And let me tell you, she can hang with them. She's going to try and be the first filly to win the Preakness here, which hasn't happened since 2009. And, Josh, do you know who the – little quiz for you here. Do you know who the last filly was to win the Preakness?
Oh, man, I should know this because I watched the race.
In 2009, it was Rachel Alexandra.
Yes. Yes.
So Swiss Skydiver has a chance to be the next filly to win the Preakness here. She finished 2nd in the Oaks, and I think that was her best race in her career. She posted 109 speed figure there, which was nice. And then I just think she's ready to go. She's improved in every race, I think. And she's got some rest since the Oaks.
Okay.
And I think Swiss Skydiver. Yeah, I think Swiss Skydiver is gonna be my number one horse I'm playing here. The next one, I'm going to go with Art Collector. I think Art Collector is a great one. He's one of my he was one of my picks in the Derby behind Tis the Law, and then he ended up not racing. He was scratched because he had a heel injury.
Got it.
So Art Collector's got some more rest too as well. I think this horse is well rested. Has had some really good workouts, and I think that's going to give him an edge here on Saturday. I think this horse also giving him an edge. Art Collector. He's won 4 straight races since May that he's been in. So he's got a winning record right now. He's on fire. That one, and then the two of those races, the Bluegrass Stakes in July, and then the Ellis Park Derby, which are two big. I think those are some great Grade One races. The next horse I like here, I'm going to go with Authentic. Authentic is the Kentucky Derby winner, Bob Baffert Horse. And he's coming into the morning line favorite for this race. And my gut, but my gut tells me that I don't think he's going to be in the first place. I think there's going to be an upset here coming Saturday. I definitely think he's going to be in the top of the pack, but I don't think he's going to get the number one spot.
In the right, last we 10, talked about this on yesterday's podcast.
Yeah.
Favorites win max, you know, and you said it depends on the class and the type of race.
But it really, yeah, there's a lot of components.
20-30%, right?
Where yeah.
Where the favorite only wins 20-30%. So you always got to look, okay, who's your second choice? Who do you like, right?
And that's where these exotic bets come in, where you can almost bet them, and then the win, place, and show. That's the beauty. You could bet a horse to come in second. You can bet a horse to come in third, you know?
Right.
So here's a little stat for you as well to kind of back up my upset, my feeling of an upset. In the last 10 Preakness Stakes, the Kentucky Derby winners have only won four when they run in the Preakness. So beating the Kentucky Derby winner is definitely possible here.
Right, the whole Art Sherman thing, right?
And yeah.
He wants that if you race in the Kentucky Derby, you have to race in the Belmont and the Preakness. You have to do all three, right? You can't have fresh horses because Chrome, right? California Chrome got beat by a fresh horse.
Yeah, I mean, Sherman thought that was. Yeah, yeah.
So I love your fresh horse strategy.
I think a well-rested horse is going to really – I think these well-rested, kind of more time off, these horses with the more time off are really going to show up here, I think, this weekend. And then my last horse I want to talk about, which I think it's kind of a little wild factor here. I think this one might sneak away with it, is Pneumatic. Pneumatic is a Steve Asmussen, trained by him. And this guy's won his first outing in February when he first started racing this year, and he's continued to mature and improve each race he's raced in. Wow. So he doesn't have he's one of the younger horses here. He doesn't have as much experience, but his track record shows he can definitely hang with the big boys. So in April, when he started to stretch his distance out in his races, he started out short and he started to stretch it out. He raced in a mile race in the Grade 3 Matt Wynn Stakes. And then he also raced in a mile and an eighth, and then he placed fourth in the Belmont Stakes in June. So he's working his way up that distance, and I really think that he's going to be ready for the Preakness here with the mile and 3/16. His speed figures also, we can look at his speed figures. He's improved each race, so I expect him to continue to keep that trend moving and keep improving. In the Pegasus Stakes in mid-August that he raced in, he took a giant leap forward. And he posted a 113 speed figure, which is massive. Nice. And just to put that in perspective, Authentic speed figure was 109 in the Derby. And then Swiss Skydiver's speed figure in the Oaks was 109. So he posted 113 above that, and he's racing against the two of them in the Preakness here. So I'm excited to see. I really am. Steve, like I said, he's trained by Steve Asmussen, who's won the Preakness a couple times in 2007 and 2009. So despite the pandemic – this year and all the craziness, I think him and then veteran jockey Joe Bravo on the back of Pneumatic can get him a win here on with a good price too. I think his odds will be pretty good.
Nice. I love that. I love the logic behind that.
I mean, it's going to be exciting. I'm going to have to figure out how I'm going to play these four together, but those are my four that I really think have a good chance. So
nice.
We'll see.
All right. So we'll finish with this. Does it make sense for me to put, as a novice, to put show tickets on? Because based on what you said, my mind says, all right, put show tickets on Authentic, Pneumatic, and the filly you're talking about, Swiss Skydiver.
Yeah, you could. You could play show bets on them, and if they come in third, second, or first, you're winning a little bit of money.
Nice.
And then what I'd recommend if you're play an exacta box, which is you could pick first and second place horses, and if you box it, it's in any order, so they can be in any order. Right. And pick like three or four horses and put them in there. So then you have a chance of – you could pick three horses to come in first or second in any order. And I think that'll give you a good chance too.
Nice. That's awesome. And I'll make sure you have the link and you – see this podcast we did with Tim Conley Jr., where he talked about that he learned math And he has a great joke about the exact the box that he learned math at the track.
I tell you what, these old time horse players are my favorite. I can go every time I go to a track, I can sit and watch and talk to these guys all day. They're the brightest characters. They're hilarious, and they're characters, and there's something you only see at a track. So yeah, there's always something to learn from these guys.
Yeah, and Rob Ryder had just died, and he said, you know, his dad Tim Conway Jr., Tim Conway and Carol Burnett show, but now with Brooks' wife died, but kept him alive was going with Rob Reiner to the track.
Yeah.
And just having that camaraderie and that culture, man. It's fun to talk, and I'm glad I'm learning about it. And, man, we've been lucky, fortunate, and good to get phenomenal people. And Jake's phenomenal, man. Thanks, man. You're on it, man.
No, I appreciate for the invite, and I love talking horses. So whenever you want, whenever you have questions, if anyone does, reach out. I love talking. I could do it all day.
Yeah. And the number for the podcast is 858-863-6501. You're welcome to leave a voicemail or to send a text there. And Jake and I are very accessible. And all the horse racing stuff will go to Jake. And then every 3 p.m. West Coast, 5 p.m. Central Time, we'll spend some time breaking down the horse racing industry. And I'm learning it as we go, so I can learn with the audience. And then the experts can come in and chime in, and we can all have a good time learning and sharing about the horse racing industry. Last words, Jake.
Good luck, everyone. Bona chance. It's going to be a fun race on Saturday. Hope the weather stays nice, and let's hope to cash some tickets. I mean, that's what everyone's here for, so let's do it.
Yes. And if you listen to us, you will be up. And we always close with Winston Churchill. You make a living from your labor, but you make a life from what you give. We always give free picks, and it's always at a higher level than what you can pay for out there. Thank you for listening to the ESBC Betting and Financial Podcast. I'm the best there is.